Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to that once a week, which is my promise to you guys throughout the rest of the year to have a fresh podcast to you for you every week. Also, the other way and the most efficient way of listening to my podcast is by going to the iTunes search engine and entering Warman Kickfighting Show, and it pops right up. So we'll go ahead and go right into the action. Glory, we had three cards this weekend, the three particular ones I'm going to talk about. This would be a results-based show for the most part, so I'll just kind of break down fights and how they happened. We'll go ahead and jump right into it. Robin Van Roosmalen is still your champion as he gets a victory over Sahir Adamchuk. I will go ahead and talk about that one last. Let's go ahead and work our way. Let's talk about the main event first. We'll go ahead and open the show on the main event. So Robin Van Roosmalen, clearly the biggest takeaway after this one was that he said that he was thinking about pursuing kickboxing full. As far as the scorecards go, I agreed with them completely. I thought, Sahir Adamchuk, I thought you could make a real good argument for him in the first round and the last round. You know, I thought five was clear. Five was clear for Adamchuk for me. And then the first round was very close. But I definitely think that the rounds 2, 3, and 4, there wasn't enough activity from him. And I thought Robin Van Roosmalen did a good job of doing what he does. He didn't kick as much in this one. He really focused on the boxing and the power shots. He threw a timely kick here and there just to kind of, you know, keep with the pace and keep with the flow. But not his usual combo to low kick chop. He's been going against so many southpaws lately that he hasn't gotten into that game as much. But he does a good job of biting down on the mouthpiece, bringing the war, and he's such a strong dude. He was strong at, you know, at 155. I mean, he was never big at 154, 70 kgs. He was never big at that weight class, but he was always strong at that weight class. So I really like the skill set that he brings to the table. Very offensive-minded. He wants to bring the fight. He wants to bring the pressure. And Adamchuk scored well in spots, but he just didn't have the consistency that he had. I thought that because Dylan Salvador had moments where Dylan tried to play the game, Adamchuk was able to be a little bit more aggressive in that one. But here, with Robin Van Roosmalen, a much different style of boxer in terms of how the pop lands and the ferocity in which the shots are thrown, I thought Adamchuk had to pick his moments and go. So, as I was watching how the fight took place and carried on, I was wondering, in some of the rounds, were they close enough because Adamchuk was moving so much? And a lot of times he wasn't getting hit. It should be said, there were times where Robin Van Roosmalen would bite down, you know, kind of make sounds as he threw those big shots, and Adamchuk was able to get out of there. But as far as, you know, ring generalship and kind of the pace of it, it did seem like, if you're just an outside viewer watching, if you had never seen the sport before, and you were watching this fight, it'd be tough for you to make arguments for Adamchuk when you saw how defensive he was and how he was kind of playing escape. When he started to let it go in round 5, the biggest question is, could he do something like what you see in mixed martial arts with Robbie Lawler? Is it possible that Adamchuk could have did what he did in round 5 one more time? You know, get a good start, maybe take a break, go defensive. Try to get round 3, go defensive, and then try to get round 5. I was curious because he really did bring a lot of successful offense. And when he threw, he landed. Robin Van Roosmalen's usually there for you because he's pressuring. He believes he can take your shot. So he's there to be hit. But here, too strong. RVR moves on. We'll see what comes from him down the road. If he decides to stay, of course, he's going to fight for the title in New York. He's going to defend the title in New York. If he leaves, there's someone on the undercard who I think would be a really good filler. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But RVR, still your glory featherweight champion. Michael Duhut had quite the tournament run. I thought that Duhut, go ahead and get into the first fight. It first starts off with Duhut getting a very, very, one of the cleanest KOs you're ever going to get over Dragos Zubko. Zubko's fought, I've seen him fight a few times, and I thought that he had a weird style that could maybe find some moments of success, but he's usually, a guy who could easily fight lower. Duhut just, you know, came out, had that look in his eyes. We've all seen the look before. No one has ever challenged Duke's punching power and his skill set. The only thing I've ever really heard people kind of really jump on Michael Duhut about is just, you know, his heart and his decision making. You know, those are some of the things that people kind of get frustrated about. He'll win some, lose some, win some, lose some. Lose fights that people don't understand or have to stop for some reason. But man, the mentality, the look, the anger, the focus, it was all there before the start of the fight. Came out, landed some clean. Zubko was looking to get himself back into the fight by charging his way until, landing his own big offense. He throws the right hand, it misses, and loops that perfect left hook right on the button, and Zubko is gone. Very, very smooth, very solid KO. Michael Duke moves on. Meeting him would be Manny Mancha, as Ahmad Haddar came out and landed every possible, effective strike that he could. Mancha really plays his game as of this far as he's growing and developing. Right now, his game consists of he'll have moments where he'll bang, but if you sit there in space, he'll let his left leg go to the body and to the head. No real kind of consistent combo to low kick work as of yet, or combo to kick work as of yet. He likes to play singles with the hands and throw heat with singles with the kicks and heat with the hands. Ahmad Haddar can do it all. He's a very, very skilled guy. He's a younger person, a person who I expect to see down the road. And he came out and he had a lot of success, but then he got injured. And that is this sport. He knew right away it was an injury to, I believe, the arm. I couldn't make out if it was broken or not, or was just really badly injured. I couldn't make out the severity of it. I just knew that all of a sudden he started to move and he put himself down on a knee, and before he could do no wrong. He was landing everything. Mancha had gone down several times. It was just kind of a matter of one more down and that would have been the difference. Haddar would have gone on. I believe he had two knockdowns scored. Three knockdowns in a tournament means an automatic TKO victory. But Haddar gets injured. Manny Mancha moved on. So I'll go ahead and address it because it came up on Twitter quite a bit. The question is, would you have sent Mancha back out there? And, of course, that goes down to his corner and his team and what they're seeing in the back, what doctors are seeing in the back. I have no idea. I wasn't there. For me, on the outside looking in, it would have, the decision to not have Mancha continued would have been understandable because he looked like he was in bad shape and he was out of it. But I didn't see him in the back. So maybe, in the way that they do an NFL concussion test, NFL, National Football League for us here in the States, in the way that they test people for concussions, they could have tested him when he was in the back to see if he was fit to move on. I worked a local tournament here, and they had a doctor come up and talk to people, talk to fighters between rounds. So if it happens in local scenes, with places with commissions, I wouldn't rule out it happening at a Glory kickboxing event. With that said, Mancha moved on. A lot of people felt like, body language-wise, facial-wise, it looked like he had lost the last fight before, he'd gone in there. I've seen arguments for maybe he needed the money. You get paid more money when you go out there for that next fight at the tournament, as opposed to if you just get the win and stop after one, you don't get paid as much. I heard people make that argument. I'm not sure what the case is. All I know is Manny got in there, and Duke was just 100% ready for him, 100% healthy. As soon as the fight started, took maybe 15 seconds for Duke to get close enough to throw some shots. Right hand landed high and gets a KO stoppage. Mancha goes down. Probably need to be out for a little while. Go ahead, recover. Come back, stronger next year. Work his way up. Maybe a lesser opponent before that jump. But Mancha will go ahead and take this defeat. Go back to the drawing board. Get better in the gym. See what he comes down the road. Michael Duke, he showed these signs before. Now, for me, I wouldn't be in a hurry to put Michael Duke in the light heavyweight, tournament picture. With that said, there are some good single fights to make. Clearly, they have the next title fight lined up. So Duke against anybody really in their divisions, I think, would work fine for me. Just activity is the main thing. Just be active. So I like that he's fought for Glory and then he fights for Melvin Manhoff's, his kickboxing promotion. He had that fight early, even though he lost that fight. I like the activity, the Premier League, excuse me. I like the activity that he has, I like when he's active. So keep fighting, keep looking for big opportunities, and hopefully we will see more from you down the road. In one of the KOs of the year, Mladen Brestovic gets a victory over Hesti Hegas. I thought that the key to it, in the way when I explained to people how Mayweather got his victory over Conor McGregor, I always say, well, you know, the technique he did was called drowning. But the first part of drowning is making someone think that they can swim. So you start some rounds where you give up some offense, and then you hold some resistance, and then they realize, okay, I'll keep going because I had offense before. And then three or four rounds in, you realize you're doing all the work, and they haven't done anything yet, and then they pick it up later. Kickboxing example of this would be Wendell Roche in his prime. Wendell Roche, if you watch some of his early fights, he could absorb a lot of punishment, bite down on the mouthpiece, walk you down, and the next thing you know, you're throwing a whole bunch of offense, and by the time you get halfway into the second round, you realize this guy hasn't really thrown that much, and then Wendell picks it up, and he's able to score big in the late second and then through the third round. That was Wendell Roche's game. Got a lot of victories with that strategy. Just a very, very steady, strong guy who could take it and push it to the limits. The reason why I bring these up, because these are examples of kickboxing strategy. In the Mladen Brestovic versus Hezdy Higgins fight, Brestovic gets the game started first and foremost by play kicking with him. Just kick return, kick return. Anytime he'd do something, Hezdy would get right back into his kick flow. He'd do a couple body kicks early. Hezdy still looking to get his game going, looking for combos, looking for, you know, inside kicks, always kick returns. Hezdy determined to not go down in the scorecard due to single kicks. Then Hezdy throws a kick to the body. Brestovic returns a high kick that gets right above Hezdy's block, scores a high head kick. Mladen knew it. He's knocked so many guys out. He knows when he hits the shot. And as soon as it scored and Hezdy went down, he's, you know, walked away with his fist high. And it happened so, so fast. When it first happened, I was like, did he drop him on the body kick? That it almost seemed like that. It was that kind of a quick return. And then I watched the replays over and over, and I was like, man, what a beautiful setup. So Hezdy Higgins is still a very talented kickboxer. He had picked up some wins, so a few wins in a row there. He'd been steady. He's still going to be a good kickboxer. He still could be a threat to beat the champion down the road. Like, I have no doubt whatsoever that if he got into a five-minute kickboxing, a five-round kickboxing match with Vitor Verhaeven, Hezdy Higgins will have his moments and will be able to combo and kick with him. But man, just great strategy, great execution by Mladen Brestovic, who was so humble afterwards. When Brestovic got on the mic, he said, hey, you know, just I knew the game. I thought it was going to be a little bit tougher. I know Hezdy's never lost here in Amsterdam. He said, just luck was on my side today. I was able to get the kick over the glove. Definitely appreciate the modesty there. I definitely appreciate the humbleness. But in truth, it was great execution in a kickboxing bout, and Brestovic moves on. Brestovic can fight anybody. Any of the heavyweights are fine. I really like the idea of a Guto and Asante fight from Mladen Brestovic next. Go ahead and give me that one. That should be a lot of fun. So Brestovic gets the victory. We move on as we talk about Yusri Bulgari as he takes on Jason Wilnes. This fight, as far as Bulgari, Bulgara winning the fight, I don't think that surprised anybody, but man, did he get going offensively. He came out landing combinations to low kick, combinations to knee, boxing, movement. Jason Wilnes was moving the whole time. It's like he was trying to get Usri to stop, but Usri was just three steps ahead. Just everything that Wilnes, as soon as Wilnes got to a spot, bop, 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 took some offense, and then Wilnes was back to trying to find Usri, and Usri was back to landing everything in the book. Then finally, he started to sit on the punches a little bit more, realizing that Wilnes was still just kind of playing the follow. As he landed bigger, stronger shots, I thought Bulgaro really, really picked it up. Like really picked up the offense. Then a kick came high, cut Wilnes really, really good. Excuse me, it was a knee. And the combination, the knee came high, went right across the above the eyebrow, really deep cut. That fight was awesome. That fight was awesome performance. Jason Wilnes is a tough guy. He will be back. He's got the kickboxing skill set. He was the world champion in the weight class. But one of the things that Cor Hemmer said very, very well afterwards, he said, it's so important to have new faces, good new stars. And that's what the future of this sport's going to be. We're about to talk about another one in a second. But Usri Bulgaro is not a guy who everybody was talking about not too long ago. You know, he wasn't, 2 years ago, he wasn't on tips of a whole bunch of people's tongues. This year he is, and that's what the game has. We always need new stars. But one of the important things that the new stars have got to do, they've got to beat the old stars, you know. And I think, and I'll talk about it a little bit later with Infusion getting ready for their big February show, and it's been announced that Andy Sauer is going to go against Tayfun Askin. Why is that fight good and important? Because Askin is a new star for the kickboxing world, and Andy Sauer is a consistent, steady star who's been doing this game for a long time. If you get that win, you get what wrestling calls the rub. And it's funny because I remember we, in one of the broadcasts of one of the UFC events, the current 205 champion, Daniel Cormier, was always, he uses a lot of wrestling references because he loves wrestling. And he said, it's called the rub, where you're building a new young star and you've got an old veteran star, and then you build up the match, and then they go against each other, and then the new star wins. And the idea is for the new star to get the attention rubs off on that person. They're the ones to follow. That's what we need more of. And Yusri Belgaro getting this win and getting it in the manner that he did made so many people on Twitter go, this guy's the truth. You know, this guy's the truth. This is the one to follow. Pay attention to this guy. So Yusri definitely takes over, definitely does good stuff. Really, really awesome fighter. Very, very entertaining. We'll see what happens to Askin with Sauer. I'll talk about that down the road. But that's what you need to have happen, Yusri. We've got to have more guys like this step up and take on the mantle of kickboxing's mine now. That's what we got to have more of. Big time victory for Yusri. We move on to Zachariah Zilgeri as he gets a decision victory over Massaro Glunder. This is probably the fight that the kickboxing had most wanted to see. I thought that it was one-sided, though. I thought that you could make an argument for Glunder in round two because it was kind of, there was a gap in it. I thought Zilgeri started the round well, but there was a gap around the, between the second, and third minute in the round. I thought there was a gap where neither guy was doing a lot. And then at the turn of that round, like early, I'd say about 2 minutes and 10 seconds into the round, Glunder landed the best shot of the round where he had a looping counter left-hand hook that scored on Zilgeri clean. And, like, they got a crowd reaction. It was a good, turn the head. The sexy shots, as you guys hear me call it on the podcast. He landed one of those. But as far as consistent work goes, I thought Zilgeri did a better job of finding opportunities to throw punches and bunches. He wasn't his usual, let-it-go self. And, of course, he's still going to do jumping knees, spinning stuff here and there. But when he tames that, when he slows that down and he just focuses on letting his hands go and dropping low kicks, this dude can fight. So, big win for Zilgeri. When I mentioned before, who would be a good replacement, a good person to step in for the glory title or for the title fight if Robin van Roosmalen truly does leave the sport for good? Zachariah Zilgeri is a good option. Yeah, he brings he's a good brand of TV. He's a good combination low kicker. He can make great fights with anybody. Ilias Blades out there. Of course, he's still fighting for the K1 brand, but they didn't use him this year. So I'm curious if he's going to come back around. He's a very, very talented guy. So there are now, this is a weight class that's really been solid in K1. Now there are some guys floating out there to build this weight class. So this is a good opportunity moving forward for Zilgeri, for him to make his name in glory, a guy who really built his brand over in shootboxing. So since then, getting opportunities, getting super fights, and just that all-action style, ZZ's the truth. You guys want to see him. As for Massaro Glunder, he's a talented dude. I mean, he burst on the scene a couple years ago himself with the win over Masaki Nori, and fought and lost a split decision to Kyle. Kyle Fairtex is one of the better fighters in the world. So it's like, I really do believe that Glunder still has the goods. I think that I would like to see him a little bit more aggressive in spots. But as far as skill goes and the fact that he's a young guy who's willing to fight anybody and has the KO pop to drop guys weight classes above his, Glunder ain't going nowhere. Another very solid performance was by Tijani Bastati as he gets a victory over Young Kumpoon Setmanchai. Young Kumpoon, I guess the surprising thing for most people was he didn't commit to the low kicks because he scored some really solid ones early. And then after that, he was committed to just boxing and throwing big shots. He allowed Bastati to play a game that he would not have to pay for. you'll hear the term sometimes in boxing, the Teddy Atlas will say, you made him miss, now make him pay. So, or you'll say, you've done the hard part, making the miss, now do the fun part and taking advantage of it. I thought Joachim Poon didn't really play the counter. I think he mentally probably, you know, said, hey, I'm fighting kickboxing, I'm going to go out there and land my boxing more. They score more boxing. But Bestati came out clean boxing and movement. He'd score a step knee or a low kick or a body kick here and there, but just in singles. Joachim Poon probably scored more of the low kicks, but after round one, he completely abandoned them, and Bestati just move and score, move and score, move and score. 19-year-old man has got skills. 19-year-old, very tall for the weight class. Bestati's one to watch, and I think they are moving him perfectly. No need to rush it. No need to throw him in there with, you know, Sinichai. Let him just keep building his brand. Hopefully he gets another fight. He'd already announced that I heard on K1 and Noob's podcast that he said that he was going to be on the year-end Dutch card as well. But, man, this kid is talented, and I want to see more of him. Hopefully they can get a guy. An old vet would be a lot of fun. Bestati is a solid fighter, so just keep him active, and he will do the rest. Another young guy who I'm really liked, and I got to watch a lot of his footage, but Ivan Denenberg gets a victory by stoppage in the third round over Wellington Uwega. Uwega isn't that he was a bad fighter, but I noticed that he does push his punches a little bit when I was watching some of the fights before he got to glory. He has inconsistent as far as his ability to sit on his power shots, but he did show me steady kickboxing, and he showed me the ability to put away rounds. So I was curious how that would work with Denenberg, who's a good kickboxer, seasoned, gone against some tough guys before he got the glory, still fights tough guys when he's not in the glory roster, not in the glory cards. And he came out and really scored offense well. Length, it's really, really deceiving to see a guy that tall, but, you know, for the welterweights, but he landed big shots from a distance. He found opportunities for step knees. But one of my favorite things is when he throws his flurries, the flurries that got Uwega in trouble, he did a good job of throwing them straight and going around the earmuffs and through the middle. Like, just kept his flurries kept moving in such a way that Uwega's guard couldn't keep up with it. So whether he tried to play the parry or tried to play the guard, Denenberg, he wasn't just throwing wide. Some of those shots came through the middle, some of them went to the outside. He mixed it up, and he was able to score three downs in that second round. Wellington Uwega, he's fine. It's just going to be certain oppositions. He's going to have to keep working. Denenberg, at this point, a level ahead, was able to get a very, very successful fight, have a very good victory. Uwega's got all the time in the world. There's no rush. Glory's going to Brazil next year, gets a fight on that card. That'd be a good bounce back for him. But I'm not, because I've been a kickboxing fan forever. I never write anybody off by any loss, and I never crown anybody champion by any win. It's the consistency that I admire. And I remember I was listening to the Liver Kit podcast, and I was listening to John C. and Dave Walsh talk about it, and they were saying it's big wins are okay. It's not that it's, you know, good or bad or a horrible thing to have a big win. We definitely want to give appreciation and praise to those who have success over an elite guy. But if you can just be great for a long time, if you could win for a long time, if you're consistent for a long time, that really does move your stock up. And even in the heyday of Peter Arts, one of the things that made Peter Arts was a star after he had won his second K1 World Grand Prix. The following year, when they went into the tournament field, the whole theme that they put in the advertisement was, who can stop Peter Arts? How crazy is that? You know what I'm saying? How awesome is it to have a broadcast, or excuse me, to have the biggest kickboxing promotion in the world at the time push the tournament that they have for the best fighters in the world and make the tagline, who can beat you? That's when you know you're one of the tops in the sport. That's when you know you're consistent. That's where we are right now. We got to have young guys develop that consistency. Denenberg, really good showing in both of his glory outings. Now we've got to get him to fight abroad, fight in Europe. We've got other opportunities, I think, for him. But I really do believe that Denenberg's going to be one of the better fighters in glory for quite some time. He's a talent. He's going to be tough to beat with that length. And then shout out to Uwega. I think that he's got the skill to develop down the road, and we'll see what happens. It's You know, it's about getting from that middle tier to that top tier. And that's something that you got to do in the gym, and that's something that you got to do with your skill set. We move on to the first fight of the night, which was pretty entertaining, as Kevin Hesslin gets a victory over Stoyan. I hope I pronounce this right. Kaprivlensky? I believe I got that, actually. So I thought Kaprivlensky did a good job of, for the most part, trying to be active, trying to, you know, throw consistency, body kicks and hands. But, man, did Hesslin really show some kind of outer world. His volume was insane. Like, I didn't think Stoyan, you know, did a bad job of throwing and looking for offense and looking to score consistently. I thought he did okay there. Where I thought the struggle was he didn't have the ability to keep up with Hesslin's offense, who was just throwing everything. Where it was a combination, sometimes Hesslin would double his kick up like he was on tie pads. Just crazy, crazy output. Hesslin's one to watch. I want to see this guy more. Keep getting him out there. Keep giving him opportunities. I don't care who he fights. He'd be a good guy to bring over the States, too. I like new faces, and this is my first time really seeing him on a big stage. So Kevin Hesslin, he opened up the card. He did a good job. He impressed me. I want to see more of you down the road, young man. Good, good stuff. So we leave the Glory Amsterdam card, and we aren't going too far away, though. We're just going to Belgium, because in Belgium, Infusion had a card, and I talked about the controversy with it before. It's as far as, you know, Muhammad Jiraiya competing and so on, but I'm not going to talk about that today. Today I'm going to talk about results and what happened in the fights. Go ahead and get it started with the end of their tournament. And again, I mentioned some of my thoughts on the tournament before, the league, I should say. The only problem I had with the league was it started off as a pretty good idea. I would have liked a few new names, but they used all their main stars, so all their main stars fought each other. The only real problem I had with the league was, man, it should have been done in a calendar year. I just thought that it stretched so long. You know, that's just my feeling. I felt like it stretched a really, really long time, and it's hard to follow for that long. Whatever they wanted to do, it needed to, because they have a big show in February, but they needed to start it in February and finish it in December. But I felt like it's been so long. Even if it's probably not even as long as I think it is in my mind, but it felt so long. So, looking at the field, we'll go ahead and jump into it. First of all, it's good to have your three biggest stars in the tournament on wins. Norden Benmo gets victory over Diego Nuevas. Nuevas did everything in his power to not get stopped early. Norden Benmo came right after him, landed big shots, digged a big left hand downstairs to the body. Diego went down. Was able to get up. Nevis was able to stay tough as Benmo was looking for the kill. He put together a lot of combinations and fast hands. And then it became just a steady workman-like decision for Norden Benmo. Very talented guy. Wherever he goes, I'm fine. Whatever fight they put him in, I'm fine. Good stuff by Norden Benmo. Tayfun Askin came out and just proved why he is the best, or was the best guy in the tournament, proved why he is the best fighter in the promotion. Tayfun Askin came out, and it's not like Radon Larkobe isn't good, but just ran into just an absolute buzzsaw. Tayfun was just on fire. He gets him out of there in round one. Larkobe's still a talented guy. Can't take that away from him. You know, he got the close victory over Jiraiya, but man, Askin came out, just showed to be a level above, landed clean offense from, you know, from the start, and got Larkobe in trouble and got him out of there. So good stuff by Tayfun Askin, who not only won the tournament, but he sent a message. He made a statement, and I think all those things are big. So now the next thing for him, it's looking like Andy Sauer in February. They're the usual, the big card for Infusion every year is usually that February card. So shout out to them. I'm excited to see that. I am curious to see what's going to happen with Muhammad Jiraiya. Like, I'm wondering if they're going to work around some things and maybe he can get himself into that tournament. But if they kind of suspend you and then you decide to, you know, fight anyways despite it, maybe that will work against him. But I'm hoping that they get him on that card because he's one of their better fighters. Everything they do with that February card is usually money. So hopefully we see a good tournament field. Muhammad Jiraiya, it's good for me to see some of the, you know, the old skill that made him great when he burst on the scene. I thought when he fought at a lower weight, when he was just below 70 kgs, I thought he threw crazy combinations, crazy volume, crazy, you know, I mentioned it before. There was a style of pad holding that has emerged in Holland where people do long combos. And all of a sudden, it produced a style of fighter that only knows long combos. Ilias Blade, one of those guys. Just people who just keep putting long chain combinations together. They don't think about it. In their mind, they don't think that it was ever impossible to throw the shots. They go out and throw the shots because they only know to do it. So Muhammad Jiraiya and Ilias Blade were two of the guys who I was most looking at as that kind of fighter. So for Jiraiya to come out and have some success and really score the flurries over Yacine Betar, it was good to see. It was good to see. Betar is a solid fighter. They'll use him again. He'll keep getting fights. But good stuff for Jiraiya. He gets the victory and moves forward. We move on to Luis Tavares defeating Jafar Wilnis for the heavyweight title. It was kind of a grinding, you know, not really a lot of spectacular moments in it, but Tavares did show to be a stronger guy. Wilnis, just that consistency that he used to show with just a constant low kick game. He seems removed from the big year that he had not too long ago where he got himself up to third in the world on the liver kick rankings, which would have been fine with me because he got to, you know, he had some success and glory. He had won the title in Infusion, and then, of course, he went on to win the big tournament in China, which you know led to a victory over Andrei Grismichuk, who of course has a victory over Rigo Verhaeven. So he had a really good streak at one period of time. And then next thing you know, he's not as consistent. Loses here to Tavares, a fight that I wouldn't have predicted that. Tavares is undersized as a heavyweight, but he kept growing, kept looking for fights. I would like for Tavares to get other opportunities. I think he fought in glory once and was stopped. Hopefully he gets another shot down the road. I could be wrong there. Hopefully he gets another shot. Okay, workmanlike, not a fight that you'll replay a lot, but the importance of it still remains. Tavares, biggest win of his career as he gets a victory over Jafar Wilnis. Superman gets a victory over Muhammad Kamal. You know, it was weird. I posted a joke on Twitter that I didn't think Superman was doing enough, and I thought that wouldn't it be crazy if Muhammad Kamal was able to do enough offense so by the time they read the cards off, people were upset by the decision. But at the same time, you couldn't go too crazy because Superman really did bring some successful offense in moments, but Muhammad Kamal threw combinations when he had his opportunity. Superman's movement kept those opportunities very, very little. Kamal threw almost no kicks in the fight, like just a single kick here and there. Superman was just able to play the counter, able to score in spots, able to land the sexy shots, able to place really well-placed low and body kicks. A couple head kicks came high that, you know, just kind of, I think, slapped at the face of Kamal, not really knocked him out, or not really, like, rocked him, but it was just a workmanlike, ho-hum victory for Superman, just proved that he's such a good fighter. Muhammad Kamal is really, really talented, and there are some great fights I'd like to see with him. We talked about Askin and Jiraiya and Bin Mo. Those guys, if they were to come down a little bit, I'd like to see those fights at 70 kgs, but Superman gets a victory, he moves on. Muhammad Kamal, you're still a really good fighter. I'm looking forward to seeing you compete down the road. Not a bad show for Infusion. Not a bad show at all. Crowd was all right. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about one more fight. Won't talk about the whole card because really I'll kind of, you know, vaguely bring it up. The entire card that went down in Lion Fight had some really good stoppages. You know, we had some crazy KOs. Steve Walker had another KO. Chris Mims had a spinning back elbow KO. Let me see. There was a jumping switch kick for Jafar Toshev that scored. And then we had a couple decisions. Brett Havlicek had a victory, and Elijah Clark had a victory as well. So I wanted to give them their note. They're still moving. These are lower ranked as far as the world is concerned. As far as the tier of kind of fights they were, these would be considered, you know, C class to low B class in Europe. That's the level of fights they were. But what matters to these guys is in order for them to get to B class, A class, they got to have consistency. So this will build. I'm not saying that any of these gentlemen don't have the skill to be A class. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the level of opposition, the level of fight this is right now at this period of time in their career It is on the lower end, so most of the card does not reflect the best fighters in the world. But these guys, they're putting in the work, and these are the fights that you need to have and the fights that you need to win to move yourself forward so that one day you can be competing with the best. So shout out to all the victors that I mentioned. The one fight that does reflect one of the better fighters in the world is Regan Ursel as he continues his knockout streak. He gets a stoppage in round five after just... To think that once he lost to Matos Cahoot, he lost to him in Cahoot's hometown. Ursel said that he took him lightly, didn't know who he was. So he at least acknowledged that, you know, even though he maybe felt that he won the fight, he acknowledged that he didn't prepare or perform to his best. Here they are in neutral ground in America where Ursel is the champion, and he just brought the violence. This guy can really, really fight. Very entertaining to watch. Does a lot of things, a lot of very skilled things. He's just a talent, just someone who is, you can't teach that level of violence. It's that desire to get people out of there. So combination, I mean, hurt him with kicks. He hurt him with punches. He hurt him with knees. Just as complete a performance. I'm sitting there watching the fight, and I watched those body shots go in, and I was like, dude, what? My favorite knockdown was the second neck down because it was such a clean left hand to the body, and I was like, man, Ursel's legit. So really, really good stuff. Anybody they bring in is good. Hopefully he gets the fight. He explained it that Lion Fight has his rights in America. So he's pretty much good to fight whoever outside, for whoever outside the promotion. So I'm hoping that, you know, Glory K1, you know, Kun Loon, a little bit tougher there. Anybody give this guy a shot against some of the better fighters in the world. He really, really is entertaining. So next week I'll be back and I'll break down the Glory China card. And then I said I was going to get into a series where I talk about some of the bigger questions in kickboxing. Questions like, should fighters have to sell tickets? And, you know, questions like, what do we do about bad judging? Or, you know, just the big things that come up. How do we grow the sport in certain areas? I will go ahead and give my assessment of, you know, are my views on those. And I'll kind of see where we go from there. But in the meantime, God bless. Thank you all for listening to my podcast. I really do love it. Thank you for all the, you know, well wishes and all the kind words as far as me getting the Glory job for the U.S. Talent Scout. It means a lot to me. I love being a part of kickboxing and helping the sport in any way. So the idea that I'm getting paid to do it now is actually pretty cool. So thank you very much for all the well wishes. I'll continue to do my best there. And then if you ever have any questions on what my thinking is for a car or whatever, I'll be open and... I will tell you what I'm thinking and what I'm trying to accomplish. I don't feel like this is anything where I've got to hide stuff from people. If you want to know, I want to tell you. Also, go ahead and feel free to, you know, send me a message on Twitter or something like that. If you feel like there's an athlete, especially if you're in the States, it's such a big country, and sometimes we don't know what everybody's doing in the kickboxing world. But maybe you're in New Mexico. Talk to Joe Schilling. I asked Joe Schilling. I was like, hey, man, what – I want to be good at this job. What do you feel like is, you know, missing, or what would you like to see, or what do you think is neglected, or what do you think is overseen? So I just called fighters and asked, and Joe brought up. He goes, man, I think that we had some guys from California that got opportunities and others didn't, and some guys from New Mexico are really good, and none of them got opportunities. So I was like, okay, I'll go ahead and just start asking. I'm a humble guy. I feel like it's the only way you can be successful in this sport. If you know them and I miss them, I apologize, but go ahead and message it to me. Just say, hey, check this guy out, send me a fight of his. I'll do my best to give you an opportunity because in the end, once upon a time, I was a guy who had a dream to fight in K1. That's what I wanted to do, and we just didn't have enough kickboxing fights when I came up. So the best I could do is, you know, travel the world and try to get fight opportunities or, you know, stay amateur or... fight pro, but then do MMA, then do boxing, do everything but pursue my dream of being a K1 fighter consistently. And then K1 kind of ran into its financial troubles, and then the next thing I know, I went into coaching. I was able to make my name in coaching, but it started off for me as a dream to one day have that white belt and fight in the K1 World Grand Prix. Now that I'm in a position to help someone fight for the biggest promotion in the world, to help you get on the path to pursuing the best titles that represent the most weight classes, I want to do my best to help that dream come true for you. So feel free to message me if you think, whether you are that fighter or you know that fighter, message me. Send me something on Twitter. Send me something on Instagram. Stephen the Warman for both. Stephen the Warman for Twitter and Instagram. Thank you all for listening. God bless, and everybody have a good one. Peace.